Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Soul, you know what I mean? All right. Now we're going to play this by Bobby Timmons. It's really called This Here. However, for reasons of soul and description, we have corrupted it to become Dish Here. That's the name.
It is the Savage Nation. I play one of my favorite jazz pieces from my youth called This Here by Nat Cannibal Adderley. See, I should have been invited to the Beer Summit. Because somehow I listened to black jazz musicians before I was lectured to listen to black jazz musicians. Isn't that odd? I didn't need Obama to tell me how to get along. Turn it off. I expect any minute CNN to come out with a story that
CNN has breaking news. Harvard scientists have just discovered that Obama is a direct descendant of Abraham, Isaac, Moses, and Muhammad. And that's why he chose a Hebrew tonight for the Be Here Summit.
Any day now, they're going to say he's related to God. It doesn't end, does it? So if you expect me to talk about the Beer Summit, please go somewhere else. There is no Beer Summit. It's nonsense. The villain here is Henry Louis Gates, Jr. He provoked it all. He's the one who started the racial thing going. Obama then flared it up by saying the cops were stupid. And now they're using the poor cop as a stooge here to make believe he did it all. It's unbelievable to me what a country we live in. But speaking about Obama, it's actually sad to have seen the man age 10 years overnight. Now, I read that his approval ratings are in the gutter. His, according to Gallup, drops to new low. Rasmussen says his approval drops to 48. He's got a negative 12. But if you look at Obama today, speaking about whatever, the man looks 10 years older than he did last week, at least. His eyes, forget the hair, okay? The face. The man looks 10 years older. And that is because I do not believe he has ever encountered a stone wall in his life. I believe that the skids were greased for him his entire life. And I believe he has come up against realpolitik for the first time in his life. Now, that's neither here nor there, but I'm here and you're there. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. I'd like to open with a savage rap called Tattoo on My Soul.
I got gang tattoos on my soul. I got gang tattoos on my brain, man. I got gang tattoos on my soul. I don't have any gang tattoos on my skin, man. I got gang tattoos on my soul. The gang I belong to is the toughest gang. The original gang. It's the Prophet gang. I belong to the PGs, man. I belong to the Prophet gang. I belong to the gang of prophets, man. Ezekiel, Jeremiah. I belong to the Prophet gang. The GPs, the PGs, the original prophets, man. The OPs. I belong to the prophets, man. I got tattoos on my soul, man. I got tattoos on my brain. I don't need any tattoos on my skin, man. I got gang tattoos on my soul.
Well, I created that just for you today. We played a little bit of it yesterday on the Savage Nation. You know, I try to entertain you as well as enlighten you. And once in a while, I move into one of my otherworldly states. Now, today, for some reason, we're going to do all sorts of different things. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to have the author of the article from the New Yorker, Mr. Senfa, who actually interviewed me. Amazing, isn't it? We're going to reverse it on him, and I'm going to interview him. I'm going to interview him. He's a very shy man. I mean, he's a writer. You know, most writers don't want to be interviewed. They're not talk show hosts. But he agreed to be on the show, and I have a couple of questions for him, which I'm going to save for when he appears. Kay will be on the show to take your questions from The New Yorker. And then we're going to talk about different things. We will do the, you want to do the, whatever. What do you want me to talk about? Please don't get me into the beer summit. I won't do it. Let's play some of the favorite jazz tunes of my childhood. Let's play Topsy by Cozy Cole. Let's start with that. Listen to this piece of drum work. Did I want to learn how to play the drums after this? God, I wish I could find those records. I think my mother threw them all out the minute I left the house. Then, my friends, yeah, Topsy, Cozy Cole. There's a great piece of, if you're a jazz lover, between Cozy Cole and Gene Krupa in a drum, like a drum duel. It's on YouTube. Unbelievable to watch these men. I don't know how they were so fast. And to think that Gene Krupa was white and Cozy Cole was black. Wow. And they actually played together, and they did so without killing each other. Long before the communist whites came along and told them to get along, man. How'd that happen? How come I went to the Apollo Theater in Harlem with my friends when I was 13 and didn't get knifed or killed? How come that I, a white boy, was able to go to the Apollo Theater in Harlem, New York? It was half black, half white, for an Alan Freed rock and roll concert. No one knifed each other long before the Great Society came along and told us to all get along and people started knifing each other. How come? Could it be because the radical left are basically communist agitators who really want the races to hate each other? Could it be that we see a continuum of that in the White House today, in Harvard today? Yeah. Yeah, you can. Turn it off. All right. I mean, it's a water mill. It's over the bridge. The water mill. So now let's play a little bit more music here on the Savage Nation. What's my other favorite that I like here? Yeah, okay. Lester Leaps in Charlie Parker. This is how they wrapped up every jazz performance, usually. Anyone know the half note? Does anyone know the half note? Raise your hand if you've been in the half note after 3 in the morning before 1960. Don't raise your hand. I'm not interested. I don't want to hear from somebody in an oxygen tank. I mean, if you are, I'm sorry, but I don't want to. It's too bad. The days are over. The day is over. There's nothing left. All that's left now is rap music. Hatred. No music. Atonal stupidity. Hieroglyphics were more advanced than rap music. So, as you can see, you're not going to get a regular show today. Because I'm not interested in anything today. Well, what do you want me to talk? I can't talk about it anymore. I can't do it anymore. I told you yesterday about monocultures. I told you about that yesterday, about the Irish potato famine. Remember that? Yesterday I compared most commentators in the media today, and I mean left and right, to what happened to the Irish potato in the 1850s. You see, the potato famine, which caused so many Irish to leave Ireland and so many died, was caused by the fact that the British forced the Irish to plant only one type of potato, only because it was convenient for commercial purposes to plant this one variety of potato. And so when a virus, I think it was a potato blight, appeared and spread through the potato plants in Ireland, nearly all the potato crop was wiped out. Why? Because they were genetically identical and they had no resistance to the blight. It was a monoculture that could not adapt to change. Now, today, conservative commentators, as well as liberal commentators, have both become media monocultures developed only for commercial purposes. They talk only about politics, only about how bad Obama is, only about how great Republicans are, only about how bad Republicans are and only how great Obama is. They have become a blight on this once fertile field of the media landscape. Play some jazz, Johnson. I want to move on here. Now that I've given him the...
Dee 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 d
Only in America today could a mediocrity like Henry Louis Gates Jr. be called a scholar. Only in the America of today could the entire media talk about Michael Jackson and where his corpse is. Only in the media of today could they talk about which beer they're drinking in the White House. Hey, do we have Old Man River? I was going to sing that on the show today. I was going to do some karaoke. Let's get Old Man River. I'm in the mood for Old Man River. Then I'll take your calls at 1-800-449-8255. I want to hear Old Man River for 1 minute. Savage Nation. So CNN is about to break a news story that Obama is a direct descendant of Abraham, Isaac, Moses, and Muhammad and Buddha. And at the beer summit, he chose a Hebrew. Ha ha. Yeah. Ha ha ha. Well, let's see what's going on. Jacko's chef dishes on his last minutes. That's hot news from the New York Post. That's a huge story. Jacko's chef, not member of media banned by British government for racial and political reasons. Oh, no. No, 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 no. Oh, no. No, 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 no. 1-800-449-8255. Has anyone noticed how old Obama looks? How overnight he turned 10 years older? And I'm serious about that. Hartford, Connecticut. Jeff, you're on the Savage Nation. Jeff, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please. Oh, we're off and running at the races. I finally take a call and there's nobody there. Teddy, San Francisco. My dog's calling. Teddy, welcome to the show.
Hey, Teddy Randazzo. Remember him with Alan Freed back then?
Nope.
It was my father. He was in the movies. You said you went to the movies and no one knifed you because they were doing blacks and whites together, doing music together in the 50s?
Well, it's not that everyone loved each other, but they kept their own positions and nobody attacked each other. The racial hatred stirred up in this country was stirred up by the Great Society rhetoric of the Johnson liberals, of whom Obama is a descendant. The liberals have stirred up more race hatred in this country than the conservatives.
I know. I'm with you there, Michael. And then remember Going Out of My Head Over You, that song? My dad wrote that with Little
Anthony. I'm sorry. This is a family show, Ted. We can't disclose things like that. Thanks for calling. Sorry about that. Montana, Ken, welcome. No, what is it you want to talk about? Senate to vote on this, Senate to vote on that, state budget deficit reaches this. There's nothing in the news. There's zero in the news, so therefore I can't talk about the news. I can only talk about myself. You know, that's what I'm trying to avoid here. I'm trying to avoid talking about my problem with England and how racist it really is and how politicist it is. I mean, why do you think they picked me? I was a scapegoat. There was a great article by Selwyn Duke called Britannia Ruled by Knaves, Savage Band to Fill White Man Quota. Racism. You hear this? When I first heard that radio host Michael Savage had been banned from traveling to England along with an assortment of Muslim terrorists and other miscreants, my first thought was that the public relations arm of the politically correct thought police had struck again. It only made sense. Given how Britain is now bedeviled by Islamic jihadists, it had a legitimate reason to keep their most zealous fellows from the nation's increasingly volatile Muslim masses. Yet the spineless Neville Chamberlain bureaucrats charged with this task, whose credo seems to be peace through capitulation, would never want to be seen as singling out Muslims. So they traded a man's reputation for peace in our time. Now this analysis has been vindicated with the release under a Freedom of Information Law of shocking documents showing that the UK's Home Office did in fact ban Savage to balance the Muslim personae non gratae, writes the Daily Mail. So there it is. There it is. That's the story. But what I've made my point. I mean, you know. He goes on and says, ain't political correctness grand. Like Sonia Sotomayor, Jocelyn Elders, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and so many others, it's obvious that Smith was an affirmative action appointee. She held her position because of chromosome configuration, not qualifications, he writes. So you could say that the Savage story is one of a bureaucrat chosen by quota who then chose a victim by quota. In other words, they profiled me. I was politically profiled. And if Obama was a fair president, he'd have me in the White House with the British ambassador and getting us together to talk instead of some stupid story out of Cambridge, Massachusetts that's really a nun story, started by a troublemaking professor who didn't belong at Harvard in the first place because he's never done anything that's of any scholarly merit. It's direct science. It's direct political science that he writes. But, oh, yeah, get down and worship it because he wrote it. He wrote it. Coming up soon in the Savage Nation is the man who wrote the New Yorker profile of Michael Savage for your questions and answers. Kalefa Senna up on the Savage Nation. Wisconsin Elliott, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, how you doing, Savage? I've been a long-time listener, and I'd like to say I'm really proud of you. And I'm proud of that article, and I'm proud to be a Savage listener. And that's
Wait, that's an important call. I'll tell you why, because it's starting to occur to me that many of my listeners are not happy that I appeared in the New Yorker. They don't understand that it's actually a validation of their listening all these years.
Dr. Savage, I think yes. It's cool that they called you weird.
You know, that was actually the highest note of the interview on the podcast when they said he remained weird. I like weird.
Because you stand out, because you stick out and you speak to the common man.
Weird is good. In a society where everyone's trying to be the same and not stick their neck out, being weird is really good. Being real weird, as opposed to fake weird in San Francisco, where the weirdos are not really weird because they're just like each other. Thanks for the call, 1-800-449-8255. Let's play some jazz now. Let's stop the nonsense. Let's stop the talk. Fire away with something good. We got Charlie Parker on. I used to love that jazz stuff, where they would announce which musician was on which instrument Saturday morning. All right, welcome back to the Savage Nation. We're not talking about the beer garden party at the White House. We're going to talk about, well, I'm sorry to tell you, me. As some of you may know, a major profile appeared in the New Yorker magazine entitled Party of One, Michael Savage and Onyx Brigaded. And it was written by Kalefa Senna, who joins us now from New York City. Kay, welcome to the Savage Nation. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. Good to talk to you again.
Now, I didn't know that you as a writer would, you know, break away from the normal shyness of a writer and appear on radio. I'm glad you did. My first question to you is this. Who do you think has lost more friends or listeners or readers, you or me?
I can't say I've experienced any personal backlash. I've gotten a few emails from people I know who say, I listen to that show, too. I love that show. I can't believe you wrote
that. Oh, the secret Savage listeners amongst the liberal the liberal intelligentsia. What has the response been from readers of the New Yorker? Forget your friends, if we may, for a minute.
You know, all the emails I've seen have mainly been positive. It's possible that they haven't been forwarding the negative ones to me. I'm not sure.
Sounds like my guys. What made you? You know, I said to my audience that the reason I went with your interview, even though I was skittish to do so, and you know it, because I was gun-shy from previous experiences with people who made me think that they liked me or, you know, really wanted to do a real story, is that you had been a jazz writer for the New York Times for years. Isn't that true?
It's funnier than that. I was a music critic for the New York Times, but one of the main things I actually wrote about was hip-hop, which is
yeah.
a world apart in one sense, but similar only in that a lot of rappers are people who are used to being attacked for various reasons in the media, and I was someone who kind of appreciated what they did with words. So if there's any connection, I guess that would be it.
Well, did you hear my rap at the beginning of the show called I Have Tattoos on My Soul?
I did. Are you looking for a record contract?
Well, I may move into that medium one day. So you were a music critic for the New York Times. I figured you actually listened to the music and didn't focus solely on the musician. And I figured, well, if you actually listen, you must be hearing what I'm actually saying. What was the most surprising item, thing that you found out about me that you didn't think you'd find out about in doing this story?
That's a good question.
Okay, that I like Beck's beer.
No, I think it was that when I hear you on the radio, it's so vivid the way you talk, and there's so much passion. And to be honest, I was kind of expecting that, you know, when we sat down and when we were just discussing things, just us two, part of me kind of suspected that you'd be maybe different. That maybe the radio persona would seem like it was kind of just a persona, and then I'm talking to you in person, and I'm getting a very different thing. And so so maybe one of the biggest surprises was that it was exactly the same guy. You know, the subjects we talked about might have been a little bit different, but a lot of parts of our conversation could have been exactly something that you would say on the air.
In other words, what you see is what you hear.
Yes, and I mean, maybe it goes the other way around. Maybe it's that when I hear you on the radio, it sounds exactly like what you would sound like talking to someone on your back deck.
It is true. I don't really change form very, very often. So you wrote about rap music. You were a music critic for the NYT. You now write profiles. I know you told me that you were coming out west when you interviewed me to interview a boxer. Did you ever get that profile done?
I talked to the boxer, and I found out that the day after I talked to him, this is an up-and-coming guy, not someone that people would have heard of, but the day after I talked to him, I discovered that the very next day, he got arrested on parole or probation, and got arrested on some sort of weapons charge. I don't know if he's been sentenced yet, but basically that story is on hold.
Who else have you profiled for The New Yorker?
The last big one that they printed before this one was the comedian Cat Williams, as an African-American comedian, who's one of those guys who's hugely popular, but again, the readers of The New Yorker might not have necessarily known who he was.
You did that one?
Yes.
Okay.
And he's a guy who sold out Carnegie Hall and Radio City Music Hall, but kind of in sort of an underground way. And I was a fan of him, and so.
Wow. Maybe I should do Carnegie Hall. You could introduce me.
You could drive on in the little mini car.
Oh, the clown car. No, I drive. You know, I once did a live performance driving on in my '65 Cadillac. Everyone loved that one. That 65 Caddy, it represents America at another time. You know, thick glass when the chrome was thick and the women were straight was my opening line. It went over very well with my audience.
Looked a little bit like a Shriners parade.
Okay, we won't go there. What would you like your follow-up to this profile of Michael Savage to be? Meaning, I don't mean of me, but I mean, who's next?
Who's next? That's a good question, and I'd like to think that you know, maybe there's some people out there that would read my profile of you and think, oh, maybe I'll talk to this guy, maybe he'll be fair. I can only imagine that if someone ever came to me wanting to do an article about me, I'd be extremely skittish, no matter who they were from. And so
absolutely. But remember what I said to you toward the end of the evening after we went for Chinese food, and you said you wouldn't write about that part of it, and you didn't? You were true to your word. Remember what I said to you in the foggy night off Geary Boulevard? I said, Kay, I looked up at you because you're a tall guy and I'm not, and I said to you, you know, I mean, we're different in age by, what, probably 30, 40 years. I don't know how many years. And I said, you know, if we were kids in grade school, would we be friends? Remember I asked you that?
Uh-huh.
And what I said was, I said I would be your friend. And you, I don't know what you said. Did you say yes?
I said I thought that was pretty likely.
Oh, you're very, very, very cautious, aren't you?
I can imagine if that were the case, I can imagine some long, all-night discussions about all manner of things.
Where did you grow up, Kay? Where did you grow up? Here in the U.S., obviously?
I lived the first years of my life in Africa and then in Scotland, but I mainly grew up here in the Northeast, in Boston and Connecticut.
Now, am I allowed to say how distinguished your parents are? Would you mind if I mentioned it, or could you tell the people who your parents are?
I think it's all on Wikipedia anyway.
Okay, so, I mean, I was very impressed. And would you could say it better than I can, because I think it reflects upon the sun that they produced in the sense of your balance. I don't know how else to put it.
Well, as most children of parents can attest, my main goal is not to bring shame upon them. But
wow. But not every child thinks that way anymore. So obviously they instilled a sense of responsibility in you, which is very, very something we share together. Your father is a professor and so is your mother, isn't that correct?
My mother's actually a senior lecturer officially, but yeah, they're both at Yale University and teach fields related to Africa.
Amazing in that if someone were to look at your pedigree and someone were to say, this man would never do a fair write-up on Michael Savage, he would skewer him, and they'd probably be right 90% of the time. Why did you I got to ask the question another way. When you set out to write this, did you set out with a bias in mind?
Absolutely not. I think it's a few different things. One is that I don't think I'm not sure that skewering is what I'm best at, and certainly so I wouldn't have set out that way. But to be honest, I don't think I or anyone else would have been interested if this was just going to be a profile that just says, oh, this guy Michael Savage, he's a terrible guy. I don't think the editors would have even signed off on me wanting to do that.
Well, that's what you had written me. You wrote me such an email, and I actually believed you. And one of the reasons I was relieved when I read the article Monday is because I took a gamble on humanity. And it paid off. In other words, I had my faith in the journalistic element of humanity was reaffirmed. Okay, that's the absolute truth. I said, here it comes again. After what I've just been through with the 3 months of being a tar brush, so to speak, by the British government for quota reasons, I said, that's all I need now is another body blow. I was very pleased. I mean, it wasn't like you were my PR man. There's a lot in there that people could say is negative. But I don't see it as negative. I mean, when you said I'm still weird on the webcast, I was very honored.
I think so, and I imagine that your faith in mainstream journalism has been restored, probably briefly, I would guess.
Uh-oh. Yeah, I know what's coming tomorrow. Now, here's a weird question for you. Talking about weird, the color drawing, the painting, the watercolor of me. Who in the heck did this? Because the person isn't credited here.
Let me look. I've got a copy of the magazine here.
I mean, it's not bad. They did catch my eyes. They really did. I trust the eye. But where'd they get that mouth, that, like, prissy mouth? That's not my mouth. I don't even know what picture they got it from.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know what they were using as the photo reference.
Amazing because it's somebody got a picture of me that I don't even know is on the internet.
Philip Burke is the artist, and I don't, as you can imagine, all these things are so separate. I don't know
yep.
anything about it.
Well, it's not a bad watercolor. Hey, I remember when I was a kid, there was a restaurant in New York that had all these famous New Yorker profile cartoons up on the wall. What was the name of that restaurant? Do you happen to know?
I can't remember. You're talking about the one that had the all the Al Hirschfeld drawings and stuff?
Yes. Yeah. That's the New Yorker, right?
Some of it, but the restaurant, I don't know. I'll never quite remember.
But is there such a place? Is there such a place left in New York anymore, Kay?
am I allowed in? If there is, I'm not.
Oh, well, if you're not allowed in, I'm not going in either. Or let's vice versa. If I'm not allowed in, I hope you won't either. But it's a very interesting question because I'm fascinated right now with a series on TV called Mad Men, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yeah.
All right, so I got season one, season two. Last night I watched season one. I couldn't stop watching it because it's quintessential Manhattan, 1959, 1960, with all of the incredible bars, you know, the interior shots of that kind of bar where the men all wore suits, the women were all dressed to the nines, the hair was done, the nails were done, the guys had perfect hair. I mean, does that New York still exist?
Did it ever, really?
I don't know, and didn't exist for me. Because I can't stand wearing a suit and tie.
Although, like many things on TV and in the news recently, it does make me thirsty just thinking about it.
Thirsty. I know where you're going with that one. Well, when you go back to the New Yorker, do people at all say anything to you, such as, why did you pick him? Or why didn't you do a hatchet job on him? No one would dare say that to you, would they?
you know, the, I mean, it's a very polite office, so I don't get, you don't get negative feedback anyways. But I've gotten probably more positive feedback from this than from the other pieces I've written. I think part of what people liked about it is that, you know, you were talking about it on the air, and it felt like a conversation between these two institutions that wouldn't normally be expected to have a conversation.
I'm speaking with Kay Senna, who wrote the profile of Michael Savage in The New Yorker, and I really encourage you to go out and buy it. I don't make any money from it, and Mr. Senna doesn't make an additional royalty if you buy it. The reason is I want the world to know that conservatives read, because I think there's a general misconception that conservatives drag their knuckles and don't read, that they don't read anything except perhaps the Gun Digest, which I read. I like gun magazines, but not to the exclusion of anything else. If you have a question or a comment, this is your one shot in life to ask it of our guest right here on the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Here's a caller out of Los Angeles, KGIL. Tom, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, hello, Michael. Pleasure to speak with you.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I went to go pick up the article in Encino Barnes & Noble's. Really excited after you've been talking about it for so many weeks. And having it in my hands, taking it home, opening it up, and finding out that the middle section of the magazine was completely torn out.
Now, we could look at that one of two ways. A fan who was poor stole it because they read Abbie Hoffman where he said steal this book, or they ripped it out because they hate my politics. Which one do you think it is?
Well, initially I thought it was because they hated your politics. So when I went in there today to exchange it, which I got a good copy, I looked through all the other copies and they were full. So I happened to think maybe somebody really wanted to read the article and they couldn't afford the magazine for whatever reason.
All right. Not a bad call. Very interesting. Do not rip the article out of a magazine. Buy the darn thing. Kay, can you stay with us for a couple of minutes?
Sure, of course.
We're speaking with the author of Party of One in The New Yorker, Kay Senna, right here on the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. We'll be right back.
Savage.
The form of Savage's show, the quick cuts from one topic to another, the way familiar political observations give rise to baffling digressions, the fluctuating tension between his blue state life and his red state message, turn off the music, is at least as important as its content, which means that it's hard to understand him and his appeal at second hand. The immoderate quotes meticulously cataloged by the liberal media watchdog site Blankety Blank, insofar as they reduce a willfully erratic broadcast to a series of political brickbats, are accurate but misleading, says the author Kay Senna, who wrote the profile of Michael Savage in The New Yorker, which I recommend you go out and buy. Let's go to Medford. Jenny, quickly, you're in Medford, Oregon. What's your comment?
Dr. Savage, I'm a huge fan, and I packed up my two little babies and drove 20 miles to the local Barnes & Noble, and when I got there, they were completely sold out. So I just want to let you know you have a huge following in Medford.
God bless you. Thank you very much. You see that, Senna? Your magazine, your editor should be very proud of you.
And we've just learned it. We've apparently from the caller before that, we learned how people could save $4.99 and just
no, don't do the Abbie Hoffman. They're liable to go out and do that. Oh God. Okay, let's go to line five. Trip in Chicago. Quick comment.
Hi, I was wondering if Mr. Senna had any comment or opinion on the state of the mainstream media, particularly print, if he thought it was generally balanced.
That's an easy question. Kay, care to comment?
I think it's almost impossible for any newspaper or magazine to be balanced, let alone the media as a whole.
That's absolutely true. In other words, how many times have I said the same thing? I admit that I'm subjective, and I admit that I'm biased. I mean, I try to support my positions with facts or any kind of persuasion I can come up with. But fundamentally, this is a medium of subjectivity. There's nothing objective or scientific about what people think.
And I think that a big part of what's changed over the last few decades is that people who feel that way, detect that bias, have so many more options now and so many other places to go to and so many other voices to listen to.
Next caller. Yeah, you're right, and that's why people think that the other guy is biased, because they see many other opinions on the internet. Fort Lauderdale, Ed, welcome to the Savage Nation. Question, a comment from Mr. Senna.
Question is for Mr. Senna. Mr. Senna, you know, I understand your parents are professors and everything, but is there anybody in your family that actually that reminds you of Dr. Savage with any that shares any of the same views?
That's a good question. I think when I listen, you know, it's funny when I listen to him, I can imagine that. But to be honest, none of my relatives really live in this country, so I don't have the experience that a lot of other people have of you know, talking to their uncle or someone at a family picnic or something. So,
Kay, isn't your father a theologian?
Sorry, say that again.
Isn't your father a theologian?
He's a historian of religion.
Okay. And that's very interesting. So, but he studies what, African religions or Christianity? Which one?
He studies Christianity and Islam.
Okay. So, but when you were a child, I don't want to delve too much into your personal life, but when you were a child, would your father read to you from both the Quran and the Bible?
No. It wasn't like that. But certainly, you know, I think I would like to think that he, you know, taught me how to think critically about things and have that kind of a perspective. But it's, you know, what he does, you know, he's, you know, like a serious scholar. And I'm very self-conscious that I'm a guy who writes for a magazine, which is a job I like, but a very different sort of job.
Does he, this is a personal question, would he be proud of your writing, or would he think that it's a step below scholarship?
My answer is the same as I think the answer of Sons and Daughters Everywhere, which is, gosh, I hope so.
Yes, I understand. Who can say what's going on in a parent's mind? We're out of time, and I recommend everyone listening to the show who enjoys the Savage Nation and who loved hearing the honest voice of the author, Kay Senna, who wrote Party of One for The New Yorker. Go out and buy it. You're a wonderful young guy, Kay, and I wish you a tremendous career ahead of you. Thank you very much for treating me fairly.
Listen, thanks for everything, and thanks for talking to me.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I don't want to be struck dead on the mic. But let's say you go before. All right, Savage, get up here. All right, let me see. Here's the whole list. All right, read it out to me. And then the angels are, he did this, he did that. You know what he did that time? Have you only got, he did this, he did that, he did that. All right, buddy, we balancing it out. He's not that bad. He missed the mark. He committed some sins, but he's not evil. Evil is another story. Evil are people with Marcy Park type events in their life, not this. All right, overall, you did okay. So here's what we're going to do for you. You're not coming back. The good news is you're not coming back as a roach. All right. You're not coming back as a Democrat. Oh, thank God. You're not coming back working for the Clinton administration. Never. All right. That's thank God I'm not going to be a worm. But the bad news is you're going to come back as a human being again. Oh, God, no. The Buddhist wheel all over again. Do I have to start in the Bronx? Yeah, well, this is what we want to tell you, Mike. Here's the story. There is no time. The whole thing is it's all a racket. There's no time. Clocks have no meaning. Dolly was closer to the truth. They're all bent because the hands move, but nothing else moves. So here's what it is, Mike. You're going to be reborn again in Mount Sinai Hospital in the year you were born to the exact same parents, and you're going to go through the very same life again. No, I don't want that. Why, it was so bad? You want me to make you a bug? No, but do I have to do that all, everything again? The meatball on the wall, the whole thing, the fights in grade school, all over again? Loved by the sewer plant and info in Alley Pond Park? Affirmative action? The radio career? Why, that wasn't good enough for you? Would you like something else? No, God, I'll take it. All right, so that's what I think. I think that, in essence,
all right,
this
that's,
is
that's
it.
The piece. Thank you. That was from what year, guys? You found it on the show last year, and it was picked up by the author, Mr. Senna, in the article in the New Yorker. He says his thoughts on dying are often informed by Buddhist theories of enlightenment or reincarnation. And during one digression, he staged his own afterlife as an improvised two-character dramatic scene. So I'm thinking of opening my movie, by the way, with this scene. Would you? I'm actually, because of this article, I'm thinking of the Michael Savage movie. All right, I know I'm talking about myself too much. I admit it. But since there's nothing else that interests me right now, what do you want from me? We could talk about the beer that Obama drank. I mean, that's really exciting. But hasn't that been covered? Isn't it already? You know the whole story. The end of August at the Hotel Ozone is how I ended the show last night, right, Beowulf? And you looked it up on the internet? What was the plot, Beowulf? If you want to come in the air, do you remember telling what the plot was of that movie?
Yeah, let me grab it from the internet.
Yeah, it was the end of August at the Hotel Ozone. I remember seeing it in the late 1960s as one of the underground movies, and I it stuck with me, the title. What was it about, Beowulf? Do you know?
Let me bring it up. It's a post-apocalyptic film, and I'll bring up the exact quote that I had.
A post-apocalyptic film. Wasn't it about a world without men?
Yeah,
where women.
Yeah, there was these women that run around, and here it is. Yes, nuclear war has destroyed most of civilization. A pack of wild girls search for males who can give them children.
It sounds like Sex and the City.
Exactly.
Sounds like New York City to me. A pack of wild women search for males who can give them children. That's right. It sounds exactly like San Francisco or New York City to me. Or actually L.A. It's all the same. So the whole world is now the end of August at the Hotel Ozone. All of Western civilization has become the end of August at the Hotel Ozone. Packs of wild women looking for males who can give them children. It seems that only the religious can find guys to give them children. Isn't that interesting? Like the religious people have big families because they're following God's law, and it's like go out and reproduce. And the enlightened ones can't have children, won't have children, don't believe in children. They become sterile in essence, spiritually sterile, and then physically. It's interesting. They become spiritually sterile. They don't believe in God, and then they become physically sterile. They can't or won't reproduce. It's very interesting. Somebody could play on that one. Now, I mean, I could lead to the next topic, you know, and say to you, are you a woman out there looking for a man? I mean, I'm not proposing to you, but, you know, is that still going on? I don't think the women want to have family. What I've found in my social observations is this. 10 years ago, we used to hear that women couldn't find men who wanted to settle down and have families. I think now, 10 years later, the women don't want to settle down and have families. I think the women have become as hedonistic as the men, and they're just as happy to live solely for pleasure and Manalo shoes. I think that's what's happened in the world today. Da, 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 play some jazz, would you please? I'm just rambling. It's rambling thoughts from a rambling mind on the Savage Nation. That's what it's all about. Who's this, Coltrane Impressions? How did I not know that? Finally got one right. That was a tough one. I could have gotten that wrong and really had egg in my face. It is the Savage Nation. Now play one of my favorites, one that I can't get out of my mind. Dizzy Gillespie, A Night in Tunisia. Then we'll take calls on the Savage Nation. That's the one I really love. You can feel Algeria. You can feel the Casbah when you hear this. You can see the beaded curtains being pushed aside by a man who has had his private parts surgically adjusted. He's overly large. He's a castrato. But he came out large rather than small. He looks like Mr. Clean. Oh, man. Mr. Clean pushing aside the beads. What do you find when you go in there? Nothing. Same thing. A drink, a beer. Idiots looking at each other.
All right, turn it off. I made my point. So last night I couldn't go to sleep. I was up till 3 in the morning. As I said to you, I'm a huge fan of Mad Men. The best ones were written by Matthew Weiner. I mean, he wrote the. If you look back on this, let's say you're a Sopranos fan, and you look at the writers of each serial, the best ones were generally written by Matthew Weiner. So he went out on his own. He took some of the best staffers from The Sopranos, and he created a new series in 07, I believe, 08. 07 was the first year, right? Called Mad Men. And it grows on you slowly, but it's an astounding look at Madison Avenue in the early late 50s, early 60s. You know, the man in the gray flannel suit, the so-called perfect wife in Connecticut with the two perfect children, and what really was going on inside their minds and souls and hearts. And the writing is unbelievable. The I couldn't stop watching it last night. I was up till 3 in the morning. Then I got so agitated watching it, and I don't even know why, actually, that I turned it off after watching like two discs of season one. And I said, I can't watch this anymore. And by that time, it was already 12. And then I tried to do something else. I couldn't sleep. So I said, all right, one more. I turned another one on. It was like 3 in the morning. I couldn't sleep again. I don't know why this series is getting to me. I think I do know why. See, I once thought, like every other kid in New York, who knows what you want to be? I actually once had a job I was not in advertising. It was in publishing. I'm not going to tell you where. I never talked about this. And I took a job as an entry-level editor in a New York publishing house. And it was the first toehold I thought into, you know, publishing. And I read that many, you know, editors were really writers on the side. Many. I think one actually wrote a novel. But, you know, every editor, inside every editor, there's a writer, which is why they're so competitive with the people that they're publishing, as we all know. It's true in every other field. It's just the dynamic tension in life. So I get this job, and right off the bat, I don't get along there. I mean, I was a young kid. I wasn't as cantankerous as I am now. But I'll never forget the day I got fired. One of the old men took me aside, and he said to me, Michael, I'm sorry, but we're going to have to let you go. And I said, why? He said, well, let me tell you a story. There's a story of a rich man. He's one of the board members of this company, and he has a Rolls Royce, and it's chauffeured. Now, he could wear one brown shoe, he said to me, and one black shoe if he wants, and no one will notice and no one will say anything. Or he could come in socks and slippers to this company, and no one will say anything. But he said, you just don't fit in here because you just don't. Now, he looked down at my shoes when he said that because I was wearing brown shoes, as God is my witness. I was very proud of them. They were very good brown shoes, and they were leather. But if you can believe it, that was a reason for me not fitting in. That I wore brown shoes when all the men were expected to wear black shoes in a publishing company. So I had a taste of that conformity, and I knew that that was not where I wanted to go. Now, how did I know that it would be radio one day or writing on my own in my own way? I didn't know. I'm collecting plants, all the different things that I've been fortunate enough to experience. I had no idea, so... All right, guys, let's go to Bloom Ditto by Charlie Parker. Take some calls here on the Savage Nation. I really want you to do this for me right now. But go to Cannibal Adderley talking about this here because there's a reason for that. Play it now.
Soul, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? All right. Now we're going to play this by Bobby Timmons. It's really called This Here. However, for reasons of soul and description, we have corrupted it to become Dish Here.
Now, when I first heard that, it must have been 1958, 59. I don't know the year, 57, 58, 59. I had never heard anyone speak that way. But when he said, for reasons of soul, we have corrupted it to this here. It struck me as something phenomenally interesting and important, and I still to this day don't know why. Do you? I'll be right back.
Savage. Oh, Danny boy, the pipes are calling from glen to glen.
It is a Savage Nation. We're looking at a picture of the president serving beer in the Rose Garden to the offended professor the easily offended professor, who got very far in life with his offense. You heard of a defense mechanism, didn't you? This one has an offense mechanism. Anyway, you look at the table there. Biden didn't touch his beer. Obama didn't touch his beer. The prof didn't touch his beer. Only the Irish cop is drinking the beer. He's slugging it down. Unbelievable to me. Well, that's because in reality, you know that the professor from Harvard wouldn't touch beer. He's used to a special Chardonnay from Sonoma, radicchio, heirloom tomatoes, poached salmon, you know. Every time you read these menus, like it's real special, like you can't go to Safeway and get salmon or heirloom tomatoes or radicchio. I can't understand why they make such a big deal out of it. I grow my own tomatoes, truthfully. They're so sweet. Wow. It's sad because the fruit's gone already in my orchard. There's another summer, and I'm reminded, you know, I have this whole sense of time, the hourglass, don't you? I'm a man connected to the earth, a man connected to the seasons. So all year long in the winter when the trees are barren of leaves, I look at them. I stand on the deck and look down at my orchard, and I say, wow, well, I can't wait to see the flowers. I can't wait to see the peach flowers. I can't wait to see the apricot flowers. I can't wait to see the flower becoming fruit. I can't wait to taste the fruit. And now that August is arriving, the fruit is all gone. It came and went so fast. And I'm reminded of after many a summer dies the swan. You get it? You get the basic pathos of it all? Because if you don't, well, you don't. If you do, you do. And if you do, you're lucky. And if you don't, I don't know what you are. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. There's nothing that I can talk about. I mean, if you think I can talk about the beer, I mean, ask me any question. We have Jim Kochet, attorney for some of Bernie Madoff's victims, talking about how old Bernie's doing in prison in clip 9. Let's hear it.
He exercises. He walks around the track. He spends a lot of time reading, and he's got a job.
Oh,
he's in the sign factory, if you want to call it that, where he paints signs and clerks to make sure that signs get painted. It's a long way from Wall Street. His hair is cut short. He's 71 years old. He's adapting to prison life, and I'm sure he'll adapt well.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we wake up 2 years from now and find out that Bernie Madoff was arrested again in prison for having scammed license plates to Nigeria. That somehow he got him smuggled out with some federal program. Leave it to him. You put him in jail and wind up owning the jail. It's a wonder that this guy is still walking around. The wife's now on the subway. Says he doesn't talk to his sons. You know that's a joke. That's to distance himself from them because he knows that they basically, you know, were in on it with him, in my opinion. You know, where are the grandchildren? I told you how I would do this. I'd rubber hose the grandchildren to start with. I don't mean actually. I'm saying psychologically. You know that the money went somewhere to their accounts somewhere. That's a guy like him. You think you start with the grandchildren. You work your way up the food chain that way. Then you get the sons to squeal on the father, and that would have been the end of it. But I want to know why the SEC chief hasn't been indicted for any kind of shenanigan here, because there's obvious collusion here between Bernie Madoff and the SEC. Why has Bush's SEC team not been indicted in the Bernie Madoff scandal? Because they were there. They were the watchdogs. So the watchdogs looked the other way because they were paid off. You know, it's like a Brinks robbery. Let's make this simple. How many movies have you seen years ago, years gone by, where an inside job, what does that mean? It means that the guard inside the Brinks truck was in on it. Usually it means when they get in the truck and no one gets shot, it's an inside job, right? So this has all the earmarks of an inside job. Now, how do you think he got into everyone's pockets? Because the watchdogs look the other way. They're the ones who should be indicted here along with him, in my opinion. That's why the whole thing is preposterous to believe that Madoff did this on his own. 1-800-449-8255, Washington, D.C., WTNT. You're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Dr. Savage, this is Joe. I'm in the Army, and I have a good friend who's a British officer, and we discuss you because he's quite aware of your little problem that they've created for you over the pond.
Yeah.
And he's responded and told me that you're full of vitriol. And so now I'm really thankful because there's an article out there that I can give him because he's staying with me this weekend that accurately and succinctly.
Wait, you mean vitriol is illegal? Vitriolic humor is illegal in England?
Well, he can't seem to take you.
Well, he sounds like a total ass if he thinks vitriol is illegal.
Savage.
Obama meets with police officer and Harvard professor. Oh, boy, what a story this is. It's like Al Sharpton with a degree is this professor, in my opinion. Liz in Boca, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I just want to thank you for saying how great Mad Men is. I never in a million years thought I would have watched it. I am hooked. Thank you very much.
Oh, which season did you start watching?
Started one because I heard you talking about it last week. I said, let me check this out. I never watched it. I'm on season one. I just finished. And it's so compelling, but I never feel great after watching it. But I'm hooked.
Wait. You said you never feel great after watching it, but you're hooked. That's what I was getting at. It's very unsettling, isn't it?
It's very unsettling. Let me tell you, I'm a younger listener. I'm in my early 30s, but so I don't know that time period, you know. But I don't get it. The men are men. I love it. But I don't know what it is. I watch it and I think about it.
It's very intriguing. You know, this is a great question. Unfortunately, most of my listeners haven't seen Mad Men. But we could more generally ask this question, Liz. We're talking about a series on A&E called Mad Men, set in 1959, 1960, New York's Madison Avenue, Connecticut, that kind of thing. Okay, so the men are all in suits. The women are all in dresses. The men are all chauvinists. The women are all docile in that regard. What is unsettling about this generically to the viewer? What is it that upsets the viewer watching this is what I want to know. I had the same unsettling feeling watching it. And yet I'm hooked. And yet I can't stop watching it. I don't understand why.
I think it's
because I don't know. I don't know the answer to it. I haven't analyzed it. You know, I don't think enough people knows who threw McCain. Jordan in Las Vegas, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's this, Jordan? You know what?
I know who threw the McCain campaign.
Who?
Months ago, you told us that that someone threw the campaign and we would know by an appointment. But I know it was, I've been researching for a book. The guy's name is Ian Brzezinski. He's a son of Zbigniew Brzezinski. And this Zbigniew Brzezinski had two sons, one of them each on each of the campaigns. And
You're kidding me. Zbigniew put one son on each campaign?
One son on each campaign, that's right. And not only that, but Obama has known Zbigniew since his Columbia days. So this is
right. Well, Brzezinski was always a sneak. I never liked him personally. I didn't like him going back to Jimmy Carter. There was something very, very oily about him. But you're telling me that he put one son in each campaign, McCain camp and Obama camp, and you believe it was the one in the McCain camp who threw it?
Exactly. Mark Brzezinski is the other one on the McCain side. I think I'm rather on the Obama side, and I think he's even has an advisory post. And
Jordan, are you writing a book? This is a heck of a book. You should really write this book.
Yeah, I am. I'm in the process of it. It's called American Ayatollahs. You know, about the real power behind the American.
I, one thing I'd suggest is don't go jogging in Marcy Park. Oh, my. And please don't look at any unfinished apartments in any high rise in Las Vegas with an unknown realtor.
Well, and I won't give a virtual tour of any of my homes.
Well, when that book is near completion, will you do me a favor and call? Who else do you think inside the McCain campaign and misadvised him so he would lose? And every time he surged ahead, he did something to undermine himself.
Oh, well, I mean, I'm just picking out one name, but this is, it had to, he could not have been the only one because...
No, he wasn't. I can name others that I'm pretty sure were put there by, you know, for nefarious reasons to undermine McCain, who wasn't smart enough to know what was going on. He did it many times over and over again. The seminal moment came when he was moving ahead in the polls right toward the end, and the average American women were saying, Obama is a Muslim. Do you remember that particular town hall meeting when the women were saying, but he's a Muslim? And McCain got up and said, well, no, he isn't. He's a nice man. He's a good man. Remember that one?
He's an Arab. He is not.
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. He's a
He's a decent family man, citizen that I just happened to
That was the end of the campaign. That was McCain, the Manchurian candidate, committing Harry Caray, throwing himself on the sword for the power structure, in my opinion, Jordan.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only that, he told us that we shouldn't be afraid of him. Why should we not be afraid of him?
Yeah, in other words, he was gaining traction from the actual voting bloc itself, who was on to Obama. They knew who he was. They sensed who he was. They were telling the candidate who his opponent was, and the candidate himself either didn't know it or pretended he didn't know it or pretended he didn't believe it. And that's, you know, they used to say in the 70s, when the leaders won't lead the people must lead the leaders. We tried to lead the leaders, but unfortunately this one was tone deaf.
Well, he went and listened, you gave him trickle-up poverty, and he just stared at it, did nothing with it.
Well, that's because he never saw it. I'm sure that either the man you mentioned or someone else threw it out and didn't let him go anywhere near it. Because remember that last debate? I went on the radio that morning and I said, here's a line I'm going to write. It's called Trickle-Up Poverty. And I'm writing it for McCain. If he uses it tonight, he can devastate Obama with one line. It will stick. It will be the end of Obama's campaign. All McCain had to do, I said, was get up there and say, you know, he could have done a Reagan-esque thing with a smile. He would have said, you know, Senator, I know where your economics come from. We've seen this before. It was practiced in the Soviet Union and in Cuba, and it's called trickle-up poverty. That would have been the end of the campaign. Oh, McCain would have won by 10 points. But he didn't even use that line. Remember that one, Jordan?
That's right. And not only that, you told him also when the bailouts were coming to say, no, let's not give these people bailouts. Let's give them the perp walk. And if he would have taken your advice and said, you're right, he would have been up 10 points in the election. He would have beat him by 10 points. If he would have said, we're going to go after them, we're going to find their accounts, we're going to follow the money. Has there been a single investigation? There's been trillions in bailouts.
No. So far as I know, well, low-level SEC players have been indicted, but the guys at the top who actually pulled the strings have not even been touched.
Right. Well, Bernie Madoff, I mean, that's peanuts, right? I mean, we all know that he's not...
It's not peanuts to the people who lost their lives' fortunes, but Bernie Madoff ran a scam along the lines of what Obama's running right now and his economic advisors. There's nothing much different between what Bernie Madoff did and what they're doing.
No, only the scale.
That's right. Only the scale. And, in fact, the people running it under Obama own a military and intelligence agencies. Other than that, they could be Bernie Madoff.
Yeah, I mean, but they speak better WASPs, too.
There you go. Yeah, he was an easy target, Bernie Madoff. I mean, he was right out of Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Jordan, good luck with your book. That's an out-of-nowhere call. How do we get these calls once in a while that are so good? You know? 1-800-449-8255. Wisconsin Joel, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I just wanted to add that I think maybe we shouldn't blame McCain's handlers, but himself. Because
Well, that's right. Ultimately, you're right in the sense that the buck stops there. He should have been smart enough to know more than his handlers, and he should have overridden his handlers, and he should have done what he thought would have been showing leadership. But he didn't have it.
Yeah, but see, I think it's like wrestling. I honestly, our two parties are so entrenched with the power structure that they play off each other.
I think that's the answer unto itself, which is, you know, in 94 I named it Republicrats or Democans. It's a one-party system and a two-card Monty. There's only one peanut under the shell. No matter how many shells they move around, there's only one peanut. That's all there is to it.
And everything else, all the books and all the talk, is just to divert our attention from the bigger problem.
And make us think that we actually have choice and that there's dynamic tension between the parties.
Exactly, and then we argue with ourselves, and we control the population amongst ourselves by arguing.
Well, the oligarchy, which are the bankers, and they're all meeting at Martha's Vineyard this summer, probably as we speak, they've flown in on their G550s, acting like nice guys, you know, playing frisbee, talking about fly fishing and how much money they've given to various minority organizations. They are actually running the world, and that's why Obama is summering at Martha's Vineyard. He's got to go back to the people who put him in power to find out what they want next.
Yeah.
Look, I am speculating. I have no inside knowledge. This is one man's opinion. Think of me as a guy who's just put two and two together, and this is what I think. Can I ever prove it? No. Thanks for the call. That's why it's futile in a way to talk about politics. On one hand, it's futile. On the other hand, it's not futile. Because had we not raised the consciousness of the people about what Obama was, what Obama is, and what Obama was trying to achieve with his socialist maneuvers, he never would have been stopped as he has been stopped. Make no mistake about the beer thing. This is an attempt to raise his public profile, because he just suffered the first major defeat of his entire political life. If you remember, as near as a week ago, he was saying, or 2 weeks ago, he was going to get a bill in August. Do you remember Pelosi was boasting she has the votes? She lost. He lost. Reid lost. The entire radical left just lost their biggest loss of this administration. And now, so this opportunity came along with Gates and the cop. It was a golden opportunity to make Obama look like a peacemaker, when it was in fact he who stirred up the racial pot. It wasn't the teacher. I mean, it wasn't the cop, and it wasn't the cop's fault. Gates, first of all, came out and started the whole thing by cursing the cop and calling the cop names. Obama made it worse by immediately jumping in and saying that the police acted stupidly. That's what happened here. So his handlers now see he suffers a major defeat in not getting his health care bill before Congress. They're going into recess. You and I both know what's likely to happen between now and October when the bill comes back. It will nowhere near resemble the Cuba-style health care that Obama and his minions had in mind. Thank God for that. You see what I mean? So there it is. 1-800-449-8255. Chicago, Michael, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Great interview with the guy from the New Yorker. I'm going to go out tomorrow and buy the magazine. Second thing is, I wanted to mention to you, I heard you playing Danny Boy in the background, and it made me think of all the goofy stuff going on with Michael Jackson and whatnot. I don't know if you've ever heard the rendition that Elvis Presley did. If you haven't, you can check it out on YouTube.
Wait, Elvis Presley's rendition of Danny Boy?
Yeah, it's very good.
I never heard it. I play Danny Boy in honor of all the cops that have died as a result of political correctness in this country. All the cops who would be alive had they been able to act by pulling the gun first, but they were constrained as a result of the propaganda written by guys like Gates. You see what I'm saying?
And like Mayor Daley and the Chicago Way that we're now getting to live with on a national basis.
And it's terrible. It's just awful that we've become the 51st ward. It is the Savage Nation, Las Vegas. Chuck, you're up on the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Michael. Thank you for all you do. If the cop is the only one drinking, then he's the only one you can trust.
Well, he's the only one drinking so far in the picture I saw. I don't know. Maybe that was taken early on. Maybe they all touched a little beer to their mouths, you know. But, you know, this is a distraction from the big problems that we have, and I don't have to reiterate all of them. But thank you for the call. The time is 46 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the one and only Savage Nation. Savage. It is the Savage Nation. You know, sometimes I lay awake at night and I think about my politics, and I say to myself, let me really think about this deeply. Is it the liberals and their philosophy that has ruined and is ruining America, or is it the conservatives and the conservative philosophy that is ruining America? Because it's been argued on both sides. So every day I have to ask myself that question and apply it to various stories. Now, here's one, for example. Just came out in the local San Francisco newspaper. Prosecutors won't seek death for engineer. First of all, it's a biased headline written by this cretin for the SF Gate that never shows the picture of a minority murderer, only pictures of a white perps. But the real story is a high-tech engineer who is of Chinese descent, who was accused of murdering three executives at a Santa Clara semiconductor company, will not face the death penalty if convicted, prosecutors said today. Why is that? Now, why would a DA not pursue the death penalty? Because of political correctness, because of liberalism.
And so, therefore, it encourages violent crime. Liberalism doesn't actually soothe the violent beast. Liberalism encourages the violent beast. The only thing the violent beast understands is a violent response. The only thing the violent beast understands is a violent man. The only thing a violent beast can be stopped with is a violent execution. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? I mean, you ask me this, you tell me the story, and we can analyze it together, liberal or conservative, and I think you'll both, whatever the story may be, you're going to come down on my side and understand how liberalism is not only a mental disorder, but a dangerous mental disorder. Do you understand this? Here is a man who goes in and kills three former co-workers or executives at a company, and they're not going to pursue the death penalty. This is premeditated murder. Yet the DA, who is a liberal, the DA and the prosecutors who are appointed in this liberal community are all radical leftists, will not pursue the death penalty against Mr. Wu, they say because of his lack of criminal history. What? He kills chief executive Sid Agrawal, 56. He allegedly then kills human resources manager Marilyn Lewis, age 67. He then allegedly shoots vice president of ops Brian Pugh, age 47. And the DA says because of his lack of criminal history, they're not going to pursue the death penalty. Oh, I see. So because before 1938, Hitler had no violent history. He was only a loyal German. He should not have been prosecuted had he lived through World War II. Do you understand the insanity of a thing like this? What does the fact that he hadn't had a criminal history prior to killing, allegedly killing three people, have to do with the fact that he allegedly killed three people? So there it is. There's an example of liberalism as the mental disorder, and why I say that liberals are the reason we're in such trouble and why America's faltering and why we are in dire straits of losing our nation altogether. Because we now have an extreme radical leftist running this country, surrounded by the most extreme members of the Democrat Party. Way out of the mainstream, way to the left of the American people, they're now running America off the rails, not only with social programs that don't apply to the system that we all came to live in and work in, not solely for that reason, but the criminal justice system, the political system, wherever you look. Look at our Attorney General, Eric Holder. Look at what he just did. He just took a case where three Black Panthers were caught on YouTube with clubs in their hands during the election intimidating voters. And our Attorney General, who himself is Black, said, well, let's drop that case. Now, that's, of course, he did that for racial reasons. He did that for racial profiling reasons. In other words, when it suits them, they'll use racial profiling to pursue their own agenda. And that's why liberalism is so dangerous. It's hypocritical and extremely dangerous. Now, you pick any other story, and let's analyze it from the point of view of, is it liberalism and a liberal view that is right here or wrong here? I think you're going to come to the conclusion, that's how I became a conservative, by using common sense. Portland, Oregon. Scott, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, honor to talk to you. I just, you are my lifeboat in the sea of liberalism, which I'm surrounded here in this wonderful town.
Which town are you in?
I'm in Portland, right in Portland.
Sad. It used to be a town of blue-collar people, working people, people in the farming industries, in the minerals and resources, lumber. And it was invaded by refugees from San Francisco and all of the other denizens of the illiberal West, who went over there 20 years ago and destroyed your wonderful city.
They took it over. And in part of your liberalism as a mental disorder, the state legislature just passed the highest tax increase in the history of the state last week. We just
Right. Now, wait. Oregon went from 2% state tax to what, 7?
No, it's now the highest level is now 11.
Oh, so they copied California, get the rich.
Copied California. And they
well, that way you can support social programs. That way you can support macrame for murderers. You understand? Basketball for women bashers. Thank you for the call. Liberalism is a mental disorder. Borders, language, culture. Borders, language, culture. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
All right, here are some of the things I try to avoid talking about on the Savage Nation today, but how to talk about Obama and the beer summit. Yep, the whole media going on and on about the fact that Obama invited the so-called scholar Gates and Officer Crowley, who arrested him, to the White House for a beer. You see, they're not even talking about the issue of race and the fact that Obama's own prejudices and Professor Gates's race baiting got them into this situation. It's just mindless chatter about who had what beer. Ooh, Obama had a Bud Light. Ooh, they're owned by foreigners now. Ooh, why didn't he buy an American beer? Ooh, Gates had a Red Stripe, which is from Jamaica. What does that say? Ooh, a Blue Moon for Sergeant Crowley. Oh, he did the right thing. The Pat Channel, the one where the ambiguous creatures work, even had a beer summit countdown in the lower right corner of their screen so that people would know how meaningless they have become as a network. What has happened to Microsoft? You see, the media isn't capable of talking about anything more intelligent than beer choice. It's why conservative talk show hosts won't talk about history or literature or science. Both sides pander to the lowest common denominator, regardless of where they stand politically. And on a different subject, when you saw Obama on TV today, did you notice how much he had aged? I was shocked. He looked 10 years older, his baggy eyes. You see, after a life made easy by affirmative action and everyone bowing down to him, Obama has suffered perhaps his first real setback, maybe in his entire life. The conservative media slash and burn. You know, yesterday I compared conservative commentators in the media today to what happened to the Irish potatoes, or the Irish potato famine in the 1850s. The potato famine, which caused so many Irish people to move to the U.S., was caused by the fact that the British forced the Irish to plant only one variety of potato, only because it was convenient for commercial purposes. And when a disease occurred and hit the potato plants in Ireland, nearly all the potatoes were destroyed, the entire crop, because they were genetically identical, they had no resistance. It was a monoculture that could not adapt to change. Today, it seems to me conservative commentators have become a media monoculture, just like their liberal counterparts, developed for commercial purposes only. They talk only about politics, only about how bad Obama is, only great about how Republicans will save us. They have become a blight on the once fertile fields of the media political landscape. In past centuries, farmers in Europe and America would use a technique called slash and burn. The farmers would clear a field of trees by cutting them down and burning them. The nutrients from the burned trees and plants, the so-called ash, would mix in with the soil and produce good crops for several years. But then, because the farmers would produce the same crops in the same place over and over and over again, the soil would uptake the same nutrients and become depleted, and bad crops would be produced. To produce a leftist phrase, it wasn't a sustainable practice. And in exactly the same way, talk show hosts left and right have slashed and burned, planted the same crops over and over, and now their product is devoid of content. In other words, they have become unlistenable. There's not a sane human being who can listen to this stuff hour after hour, day after day. People, you see, are smarter than the media gives them credit for. They're not just political sponges. They want to hear about other things, culture, art, movies, poetry, history, philosophy. People still have fertile minds, minds that are just crying out for more, for knowledge. Not just information, but knowledge. Maybe this is something that conservative radio and talk shows refuse to understand. Maybe it's something they can't understand because underneath all the bluster and blather, I don't know what it is. Maybe they're just not educated. Maybe they just are afraid. But the fact of the matter is, the people need more. Play some music. Here we are, folks, on MichaelSavage.com. Michael Savage on trumpet. Michael Savage on alto sax. Michael Savage on drums. It's Michael Savage on piccolo. And it's Michael Savage on the conga drum. Yeah, okay, well, let's go to MichaelSavage.com. Still up, still important, condemned by their own laptops by John O'Sullivan, New York Post. Amazing, you won't believe it. The New Yorker writes, Michael Savage's favorite New Yorker profiles astounded them because they didn't think I read the magazine. I actually am a longtime reader of the profiles in the magazine. There is an article. Let's go to the bottom. Dog found 9 years later, 1,200 miles away. Aww. 1,200 miles away. Let's see what else is on the website here. Convicted killer hid in caves for 16 years in northern Portugal before he was recaptured looking like Robinson Crusoe. Interesting pictures. Woman sells TVs to avoid seeing Obama. Iowa, she said, I just got tired of watching on every channel. I thought, my gosh, does he ever stay at the White House? Good lady, burn your TV. Number three, attorney at the Justice Department okayed the Black Panther reversal. Remember those nice fellas with clubs who intimidated people at the voting booths? Ah, what the heck. It was just their lifestyle choice, according to Associate Attorney General Thomas J. Pirelli. He dropped the civil complaint against the three members of the new Black Panther Party for intimidating voters because that wasn't intimidation. See, where they come from, using clubs when people go to vote is part of the culture. From Rasmussen Reports, Obama's approval index drops to an all-time low of -12. What does that mean? 28% of the nation's voters now strongly approve of the way Obama is performing, while 40% strongly disapprove. That's a -12. It's sad that the young president looks so old. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be back. There are only a few people speaking out about the attack on free speech and on Michael Savage by the so-called politically correct Brits. Surprisingly, one of the people speaking out loudly is out of San Francisco. Rich Big Vinny Lieberman is with SF Gate. He joins us now to talk about one of his recent articles where he attacks other conservative hosts, so-called, for not speaking out in my defense. Rich Lieberman, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk to you, Michael.
In your article, you said many of these top-name hosts are hypocrites.
Well, I wrote a column about the hypocrites. I call them hypocrites, which they are, the conduit of conservative talkers that have, for some reason, I wonder why, have ignored this story, have shunned you, and have basically not even talked about this. This is an issue that really, frankly, transcends everything. It transcends you. It transcends talk radio. It's free speech. We're talking about free speech. And for these people like Hannity and Levin and Glenn Beck, not to even mention it, it's just ridiculous. And I said it was outrageous, and I did. I called them hypocrites, and that's what they are. And they stick to the same old show, the same old broken record every day. And for them to not even mention it speaks volumes about their credibility, which is non-existent in my book. They have their legion of fans and so forth. I'm not a fan of anybody. I'm kind of a, how can I put it? I'm a purveyor of the culture. I listen to be entertained. And when this issue came up, the fact that it involved you makes it ridiculous that it should take their stance. And it's completely secondary. I mean, this is an issue, as I said earlier, that is far bigger than you, than talk radio, than anything in the industry, and it involves freedom of speech and censorship. So I called them out, and I'll call them out today. I'd love to debate these guys. I seriously would. And I would debate them without pen and paper. I'll walk right into their studios, or would love to just take 20 minutes of their time and talk openly about this issue. And I'm willing to do it.
Well, instead of hearing the rally supporting the idea of free speech from these hosts, you can practically hear the crickets chirping in the silence.
Absolutely. And it speaks volumes of who these people are. And it's not just the conservatives. It's also on the left and the liberals and the progressives. You know, I find it kind of funny in a peculiar sort of a way that look for us on the progressive liberal side. I mean, the essence of liberalism is tolerance. And I get a lot of negative mail, just voluminous amounts of email, and just people that are hateful and vengeful who have no basis of listening to the other side whatsoever, which is ridiculous. I've mentioned, and I'll say it, I really think you're entertaining. You're hysterical. You've said some things that maybe riled me up a little bit, but I at least listened to the other side. And that's what I like about you, Michael, is that you are entertaining. I would watch some of these other shows and listen to some of these other guys, but it's the same old broken story, broken record every day, day in and day out, where at least you entertain, you inform, you are knowledgeable about certain things, and even on areas where we disagree upon, which I have said, frankly, and I don't care anymore. I mean, I love your show. I listen to it, and as I stated, I sometimes am riled up and quite passionate about it, disagreeing with you, I may add, but at the same time being informed and entertained, and which is a far cry from some of these other lemmings who they do the same thing every day, and they don't inform. It's the same broken record. I mean, Hannity, for all of his notoriety and for all of his will, he talks just basically it's the same dictum every evening. And on his radio show, it's even worse. It's predictable. It's boring. It's staged. Same thing with Levin, who just goes on and on and on and on. It's the same old story every single day. And Beck, who is so pathetic now that he has to resort to calling the president a racist, which, you know, Beck is I don't look, I have my problems with Obama. I voted for him. But just to go out to create something that's going to get him some instantaneous attention, like he really needs it, and to be so disingenuous and call the president a racist is ridiculous. You could disagree with him. You can rile up his base and call him out on health care, which I happen to be for, by the way, but that's another story. But just to come out and to just absolutely beg for attention and have to resort to that, it's pathetic. And Beck should be ashamed of himself. So you are entertaining. You are unpredictable. You're incredibly interesting. And I'm a big fan of yours. And if I'm going to get a ton of email and hate-filled speeches thrown my way and dictums, come at me. Come and get me.
You talk about this ban being more sinister than the media is saying. Where is the outrage from either side? It should affect everybody.
Well, you know, I think there. I'm going to mention a guy, Bill Maher, who a few weeks ago upset the left base by calling out President Obama by saying he was on TV too much and showing some degree of, openness and in criticizing. That's what I think is unique about you, Michael, is that you have made negative remarks about President Bush, Bush 41 and 43, and you're refreshing. You don't stick to the same old style every day. With regards to this topic, yes, it's not just the people on the right, but it's the Bill Maher's, it's the Media Matters, the Daily Kos, Camille Paglia, people on that side of the aisle who should be just as vigorous on the issue of freedom of speech as people on the right. And this is a very, very, very threatening type of situation because today it's you, and tomorrow it could be somebody like Bill Maher, or it could be somebody like Sean Hannity or Bill O'Reilly or people like that. This is, again, as I've stated, I'm repeating myself, but it's important. this issue is far bigger, and it transcends every issue on the table. And, you know, God help us, because if it happens in the U.K., it certainly can happen here in the United States of America. And eventually we're going to see it. I'm very, very cynical on this matter, but I think it's coming right into our livelihood.
The left is supposed to be more tolerant and understanding. Vinny, since you've spoken out against this ban, how has the so-called tolerant left in San Francisco been treating you?
Well, it's been frankly pretty pathetic. You know, the essence of liberalism is tolerance, particularly here in San Francisco. And I'm not shocked. I'm not surprised. I'm a little surprised that they have attacked me. They've called me a mouthpiece for you. They've talked about the fact that I continue to write about this, and I've sort of latched on to this because, again, it's an important matter, and the fact that it involves you is really secondary and not important. Not important. The important thing is freedom of speech and so forth. But I've been besieged with mail from the left, and I consider myself, I don't label myself, but I consider myself somebody fairly progressive. I'm conservative in certain areas, but I'm fairly progressive in other areas. But I do like to read the other side. I'm interested in that, and I've been really just, again, the amount of heat, the amount of hateful email, and it gets personal, and it gets very, very personal and venomous and just extremely angry. People, by the way, some of whom have never even listened to your show, you know? And I kind of find you again, unpredictable. And there are times where I you know, will listen to you and squirm, and I'll say, what the hell is he saying? But I will listen nonetheless. And it's just peculiar and irritating, and that the amount of hateful people out there, which I have to say regretfully, a majority are on the left. And that's unfortunate. There really is, Mike.
Rich Lieberman, keep it up. Thanks for being a gutsy guy. Thanks for speaking your mind, and thanks for having the nerve to be on the Savage Nation.
And thank you, Michael, for having me on your show. It's been a pleasure.
This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
Since the news of my immoral ban from Britain came out, one of my most vocal supporters has been Professor Ellis Washington. Ellis Washington has written many thought-provoking articles in my defense, and he joins us now to talk about his latest. Ellis, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Thanks again for having me on the Savage Nation.
Henry Gates versus Michael Savage? How'd you come up with this comparison?
What made me write this article, Michael, was this overwhelming and really kind of obsessive coverage the affair of Henry Louis Gates has garnered. I guess the incident with him in Cambridge, Massachusetts, began July 21st, last week or a week and a half ago, and something that should have just been an innocuous situation has turned into this big brouhaha, and even President Obama, after weighing in and calling the police officers stupid, now is trying to backtrack and even is having a big beer fest at the White House this afternoon. It's just incredible. It's just a big circus. So I wanted to just put in my two cents and just kind of maybe draw a few analogies to your situation, Michael, regarding being blacklisted in England, which is virtually getting no attention here in America, although it's a dominant story in England.
We haven't heard a lot about Henry Gates other than he's a professor. Who is he? What has he done? What does he profess?
21 years ago in 1988, I was a graduate student at Harvard University. And it was at that time that I got interested. I was studying history at the time, but I got interested in law. And so I was able to take a couple of classes at the law school. And this was at the same time that Barack Obama, ironically, was beginning his law school studies. I didn't know him at the time, but I'm sure our paths crossed on the basketball court because I was, back in those days, I was a big avid fan of basketball, as I understand Barack Obama was also. But that said, Henry Louis Gates was like a demigod there at Harvard back in the late 80s. He and his buddy Cornel West, who has since left Harvard and has returned to Princeton, they were like the gods to us young black students. And so, we would always go and hear them speak and things like that. And at the time, and it still exists, Gates was the chair of the Department of African-American Studies at Harvard.
The media plays this incident all over the news for a week. Every other host is covering this. And yet there's not even a whisper of Savage or a story on any of the broadcasts about my band.
Well, Michael, it's just more of the same old Stalinist groupthink mentality that has permeated America, really, for about the last 60 or 70 years, and it's really disgusting. I mean, here you are, Michael, your story, and you've been doing an excellent job with your lawyers here in America and in Britain to use the process of discovery to get emails and the contents of laptop computers of the various British officials, and it's becoming more and more clear now that our worst fears have been realized, that it's an Alfred Dreyfus affair repeated here in the 21st century, where the Jewish war hero from France was just picked up and accused of treason with no kind of evidence, railroaded through the French court system, and then shipped off to Devil's Island. Here we are 115, 120 years later, and we have a new Dreyfus affair with your situation, as I wrote about in a piece a few weeks ago called J'accuse, I Accuse. It was a spinoff of Emile Zola, the French intellectual who had so courageously and put his life on the line by defending Captain Alfred Dreyfus on the front page of one of the French newspapers, which eventually led to Captain Dreyfus being released from Devil's Island, and after about 15 or 16 years, his name was vindicated. I hope your situation, Michael, doesn't take as long as Captain Dreyfus is dead, which, like I said, was about 15 or 16 years. But I think with this latest revelations that hopefully more people will start talking about your situation here in America.
Why is that?
Yes, Michael, it's a paradox that I'm still wrestling with, and I'm not sure anybody knows the depths of what's going on with the American public, that they ignore your story, which is the clear freedom of speech and First Amendment violation by one of our closest allies, England, and now we understand that they've been in collusion with America, our own country, versus what's going on with Gates, who's obviously, you listen to the police tapes, and everything that the police officer said has come true. The woman that called the police against Gates, unknowingly, she's been castigated as a racist and has had to get legal representation. It's topsy-turvy, Michael. What's up is down, and what down is up. What's good is portrayed as evil, and what's evil is portrayed as good. Henry Louis Gates, as I said before, he has enjoyed demigod status, D-E-M-I-G-O-D, demigod status at Harvard. But in reality, he is a demagogue, and he's a race baiter, he's a racialist, and I believe he is a racist. And I think in this situation with this police officer, when you listen to the 911 tape and you read the police officer's report, it's quite self-evident that Gates purposely, for whatever reason, just created a hostile racial environment where there shouldn't have been one. And I, for one, Michael, as a black man, as a person that loves America, is born, bred here, it's galling to me and it's disgusting to me to see a black scholar of Henry Louis Gates' caliber descend to such vulgar racialist tactics.
People are saying Gates will probably receive a big settlement from the city or the police department for this. While I'm defending myself through a considerable amount of my own money and help from my listeners on michaelsavage.com.
Michael, that is a terrible tragedy, and it's very ironic. Gates comes from a very protected, almost fabled environment of Harvard. I remember 20 years ago walking through those gates, and it's like being in a fantasy land. I mean, whatever the professors do, they're worshipped as gods, and they can do no wrong, and especially if you fit into one of the favored minority groups, like being a woman or a feminist or a homosexual or, in Gates' case, an African-American, you can do no wrong. And so we see, like, the president of Harvard immediately taking Gates' side and hasn't, you know, supporting him 100%. Virtually none of the faculty that I've heard of at Harvard saying a dissenting word about Gates' naked racialism. It's really an obnoxious, appalling event that our oldest university, Harvard University, that was founded, I believe, in 1636 as a Puritan seminary to train Christian ministers, has descended all these years later to be a bastion of liberal radicalism and doublespeak, where good is spoken of as evil and evil is spoken as good. Michael, once again, I just want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to discuss my work regarding you. And at every opportunity, I've promised you in private, and I say this to the Savage Nation, that I will continue to proclaim your good name to whoever will listen. And I know, as Martin Luther King said, truth crushed to the earth will rise again. Michael, just like what happened with the Dreyfus Affair, it's going to happen to you. You will be vindicated, and you will be given a full apology by the Prime Minister Gordon Brown's administration. And I look forward to you going to speak to the British Parliament, and it's going to be a wonderful day. We just have to wait a little bit longer. In the meantime, we have to watch this sideshow and this circus and this fraud, Henry Louis Gates at Harvard, use racial tactics to slander a very honorable police officer who was merely doing his duty to try, ironically, to protect his home. I know that truth will be vindicated one day, and Michael, just hang in there, continue to be strong, continue to fight for your rights. I and a few other conservatives out there are behind you 100%.
Ellis Washington, thanks again for your great articles and for being on the Savage Nation. I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back. Savage. If you expect me to talk about the Beer Summit, please go somewhere else. There is no Beer Summit. It's nonsense. The villain here is Henry Louis Gates, Jr. He provoked it all. He's the one who started the racial thing going. Obama then flared it up by saying the cops were stupid. And now they're using the poor cop as a stooge here to make believe he did it all. It's unbelievable to me what a country we live in. But speaking about Obama, it's actually sad to have seen the man age 10 years overnight. Now, I read that his approval ratings are in the gutter. His, according to Gallup, drops to new low. Rasmussen says his approval drops to 48. He's got a negative 12. But if you look at Obama today, speaking about whatever, the man looks 10 years older than he did last week, at least. His eyes, forget the hair, okay? The face. The man looks 10 years older. And that is because I do not believe he has ever encountered a stone wall in his life. I believe that the skids were greased for him his entire life, and I believe he has come up against realpolitik for the first time in his life. The author of the article from the New Yorker, Mr. Interview hosts, but he agreed to be on the show, and I have a couple of questions. Talk about different things. We will do the, you want to do the, whatever. What do you want me to talk about? Please don't get me into the Beer Summit. I won't do it. Let's play some of the favorite jazz tunes of my childhood. Let's play Topsy by Cozy Cole. Let's start with that. Listen to this piece of drum work. Did I want to learn how to play the drums after this? God, I wish I could find those records. I think my mother threw them all out the minute I left the house.
friends. Yeah, Top Secret, Cozy Gold. There's a great piece of, if you're a jazz lover, between Cozy Cole and Gene Krupa in a drum, like a drum duel. It's on YouTube. Unbelievable to watch these men. I don't know how they were so fast. And to think that Gene Krupa was white and Cozy Cole was black. Wow. And they actually played together, and they did so without killing each other. Long before the communist whites came along and told them to get along, man. How'd that happen? How come I went to the Apollo Theater in Harlem with my friends when I was 13 and didn't get knifed or killed? How come that I, a white boy, was able to go to the Apollo Theater in Harlem, New York? It was half black, half white, for an Alan Freed rock and roll concert. No one knifed each other. Long before the Great Society came along and told us to all get along and people started knifing each other. How come? Could it be because the radical left are basically communist agitators who really want the races to hate each other? Could it be that we see a continuum of that in the White House today? In Harvard today? Yeah. Yeah, you can. Turn it off. All right. I mean, it's a water, it's over the bridge. The watermill, the watermill, the watermill. So now let's play a little bit more music here on the Savage Nation. What's my other favorite that I like here? Yeah, okay. Lester Leaps in Charlie Parker. This is how they wrapped up every jazz performance, usually. Anyone know the half note? Does anyone know the half note? Raise your hand if you've been in a half note after 3 in the morning before 1960. Don't raise your hand. I'm not interested. I don't want to hear from somebody on an oxygen tank. I mean, if you are, I'm sorry, but I don't want to... It's too bad. The days are over. The day is over. There's nothing left. All that's left now is rap music. Hatred. No music. Atonal stupidity. Hieroglyphics were more advanced than rap music. I can't do it anymore. I told you yesterday about monocultures. I told you about that yesterday, about the Irish potato famine. Remember that? Yesterday I compared most commentators in the media today, and I mean left and right, to what happened to the Irish potato in the 1850s. You see, the potato famine, which caused so many Irish to leave Ireland and so many died, was caused by the fact that the British forced the Irish to plant only one type of potato, only because it was convenient for commercial purposes to plant this one variety of potato. And so when a virus, I think it was a potato blight, appeared and spread through the potato plants in Ireland, nearly all the potato crop was wiped out. Why? Because they were genetically identical and they had no resistance to the blight. It was a monoculture that could not adapt to change. Now, today, conservative commentators, as well as liberal commentators, have both become media monocultures developed only for commercial purposes. They talk only about politics, only about how bad Obama is, only about how great Republicans are, only about how bad Republicans are and only how great Obama is. They have become a blight on this once fertile field of the media landscape. Play some jazz, Johnson. I want to move on here. Now that I've given him Only in America today could a mediocrity like Henry Louis Gates Jr. be called a scholar. Only in the America of today could the entire media talk about Michael Jackson and where his corpse is. Only in the media of today could they talk about which beer they're drinking in the White House. Hey, do we have Old Man River? I was going to sing that on the show today. I was going to do some karaoke. Let's get Old Man River. I'm in the mood for Old Man River. Then I'll take your calls at 1-800-449-8255. I want to hear Old Man River for 1 minute.
River, that old man river, he just keeps rolling. He keeps on rolling. He just keeps rolling.
on rolling.
What is it you want to talk about? Senate to vote on this, Senate to vote on that, state budget deficit reaches this. There's nothing in the news. There's zero in the news, so therefore I can't talk about the news. I can only talk about myself. You know, that's what I'm trying to avoid here. I'm trying to avoid talking about my problem with England and how racist it really is and how politicist it is. I mean, why do you think they picked me? I was a scapegoat. There was a great article by Selwyn Duke called Britannia Ruled by Knaves, Savage Band to Fill White Man Quota. Racism. You hear this? When I first heard that radio host Michael Savage had been banned from traveling to England along with an assortment of Muslim terrorists and other miscreants, my first thought was that the public relations arm of the politically correct thought police had struck again. It only made sense. Given how Britain is now bedeviled by Islamic jihadists, it had a legitimate reason to keep their most zealous fellows from the nation's increasingly volatile Muslim masses. Yet the spineless Neville Chamberlain bureaucrats charged with this task, whose credo seems to be peace through capitulation, would never want to be seen as singling out Muslims. So they traded a man's reputation for peace in our time. Now, this analysis has been vindicated with the release under a Freedom of Information law of shocking documents showing that the UK's Home Office did in fact ban Savage to balance the Muslim personae non gratae, writes the Daily Mail. So there it is. There it is. That's the story. But what I've made my point. I mean, you know. He goes on and says, ain't political correctness grand. Like Sonia Sotomayor, Jocelyn Elders, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and so many others, it's obvious that Smith was an affirmative action appointee. She held her position because of chromosome configuration, not qualifications, he writes. So you could say that the Savage story is one of a bureaucrat chosen by quota who then shows a victim by quota. In other words, they profiled me. I was politically profiled. This is the Savage Nation. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.